move those, put those there and move that over there. So.
Is that ready?
Oh yeah, it's time to play.
It is time.
So, yeah, we're all ready.
Good.
We're following these order. And
microphone.
Okay. Thank you.
Hello.
Okay, sounds quiet.
So this is off, and this is on.
Yep.
Maybe just bring it a little closer. Just drag the fan. You don't have to strain your neck.
I know, I'm a little talker.
Okay. And with that, we will get roll call.
Yolo Kansas?
Here.
City of Woodland? City of West Sacramento?
Here.
City of Woodsers?
Here.
City of Davis?
Here.
Director at large?
Here.
Thank one.
Thank you very much. And at this point, it is time for comments from the public regarding matters that are not on the agenda, but within the purview of Tri-Midland Transit District. Comments will be limited to 2 minutes per person. Please identify yourself in the community in which you live before providing the comments. And we'll go with anybody online.
There are no comments online.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Anybody in the room? Seeing none, I'm going to go ahead and close public comment, and we're going to move on to approval of the minutes. Are there any changes or corrections before we get started?
So Ruth and I have a couple of just trivia comments that I'll give to you afterwards.
Are they going to change the substance?
No, not at all.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion carried. You got minutes. And with that, we're going to move into the ADA rider policies application and service area. And I believe we're going to.
Well, we're not cool. Yeah. So.
Is your mic on? It's not just me.
It's good to see you all. I think for this presentation, we want to set kind of the framing of what to expect from at least this presentation. So internally, staff have been working on revising our ADA policies for paratransit. In addition to that, we've also been looking at changes for the name itself, service area, and our rider policies. And the reason why this is important is because, as you know, we've had to cut some of our service post-COVID, and ADA requirements are to ensure that paratransit service is providing mirroring the service that we provide on a fixed route. And so with that in mind, we have not made that change with the current paratransit service we provide, both in service time and coverage of area. And so with that, this update really is to put into alignment with what we currently operate with our fixed route, as well as provide some timely updates in terms of how our application process is currently being reviewed internally and also the submission process externally. And then with that as well, just kind of overall taking a look since the last time these documents have been updated individually, some dating back to 2016, some more as recent as 2018. And so this process, we're just now kind of in the beginning to mid phases of completion. So for the time being within this presentation, we're going to show you the proposed recommendations that we're looking at for the changes that we're making, and then kind of getting some feedback from you all as well. So just want to set the stage on that before we go to the next slide. So kind of as I reiterated, what you should expect from this is the staff recommendations, a background of kind of the paratransit service as a whole, and more so the policies and the documents that where they currently live and the status of what they've previously been updated. The name change, rider guide, the application, our rider policy, those are all our documents that feed into our paratransit service that riders would use. And then also the service area and service times, which, as I said earlier, bringing that into alignment with what we offer with Fixed Route, but not necessarily just cutting the service just because we've removed some of the service from our Fixed Route. And I'll get more into that at the end of our slide. So, you know, the next one, Heather. So, really from this presentation, like I said, we want is your feedback on our proposed updates across all of our rider policy documents, the application process, and the service area. So next slide. So just kind of a quick background, June 13, 2016, that was the last time that the rider policies have been updated. As you know, since then, a lot has changed within the OTD. Some things, you know, be extenuating circumstances beyond our control. And then within that, since 2020, we've also had noticed, based on our data, that we've had a steady increase in ridership. And what was most surprising is that this was reflected during COVID, where even though our fixed route service went down, our paratransit service was actually steady in terms of ridership. So we didn't lose any riders compared to our fixed route. And since then, we've really noticed a steady uptick of about, I'd say on average, 15 new rider applications we're getting a month. So with that in mind, we're kind of being mindful of noting the shifting demographic changes in terms of service that we provide, and then being mindful of that now that we have this opportunity to reframe a lot of our documents, we want to just be inclusive of all the information we have available. And so with that, one last thing. Just wanted to note on the last slide. To date, we have over 1,000 registered paratransit riders that are eligible for service. And one of the things that we look to do is once this process has been completed is kind of begin to revise and send out a notice of, like, updating our internal information so we can move forward with better data and understanding of the demographics for some of our riders, which we were not able to capture with our previous application. So we go to the next slide. So one of the first things we're looking at is the name change. So YOLA Special, and just kind of that connotation with the paratransit service, let's just say it's a little insensitive. So with that in mind, YOLA Mobile is kind of an internal thought that we've had where it's it rebrands kind of away from any type of ability and more so just, well, you're on the go, you're moving. And so I think for how this presentation will work is I'll kind of go through everything. And at the end, we can kind of open it more up for a discussion piece. But that is what we're considering just to start off in terms of, again, thinking of the service we provide, starting with the name, the experience, and kind of moving forward. So we'll go to the next slide. So at a high level, some of the changes for our rider guide. The rider guide is essentially the document that serves as the companion piece for a rider to be new to the paratransit service or someone who just needed a refresher or kind of the what are some of the things that they can experience while riding paratransit. What we are looking to do is currently the document is about almost 20 pages, so we're streamlining a lot of the information. We'll be spreading out some of the information that isn't really necessary to knowing how to use the service, so putting that in an FAQ, along with just general formatting, table of contents, again, just making this a more usable document that people can easily source information specifically that they're looking to, as well as updating the holiday schedule. So since the last time this document was reviewed, we have two additional state holidays, Chavez and Juneteenth. So those will be incorporated as well. Go to the next slide. So now changes for the application process itself. So what we're currently in the process of doing is actually digitizing the whole document. So we won't have to have riders who are planning to submit their application go through snail mail. So again, moving into more modern times, some of the questions that we were looking over, there's about over 20 questions and it constitutes about a 20-page application in itself. So we're still working on essentially streamlining some of the questions on our end. So that way we're really honing in on, based on the applicant's needs, that they're being correctly identified for the type of paratransit service we provide. Just as a background, there's four different types of paratransit eligibility criteria, and that is actually just set in stone with the ADA policies. And so we mimic that information in our application, but we can change the questions in a way that we don't need to ask, you know, the same thing maybe 10 different times in order to derive that solution. Another note just that we had 21 days, but really the way our staff of Nextdoor operations staff work is they're in 5 days a week, specifically on the administrative side. So just making a note that the window is 21 working days instead of just 21 days. Just making sure that's clear on the applicant side so they can have some idea when to expect follow-up. Next slide. So now for the changes to the rider policies, really it's just one of the bigger changes we're looking at is removing punitive language and reducing our suspension policy window. So previously it was a rider could only have 3 missed rides within a 60-day period. Otherwise, they'd be suspended from service for a week. And then depending on if that infraction were to occur again, then that sentence would double to 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. So with that in mind, we're just moving it to a 30-day cycle, just fixed on a month, and then it resets. And we felt like based on Nextdoor and a lot of the feedback we had from our operators that they weren't experiencing a really delinquent issue, so there's no need to essentially have such harsh penalty window that we currently have. Next slide. And so now what we're going to highlight now is the changes to service area and the proposed service times. And so for this, I really wanted to highlight that what I've done is just shown the routes that have been removed from fixed route since we have operated, on the slide here, what I'm showing is just the routes that we no longer operate on our fixed route service that are still being operated on paratransit today. So on the left, you're just seeing that we are going to be, for Woodland, reducing service times, and this is based on cuts from routes 210 and 214. And this applies for both Davis, West Sacramento, our intercity service, and then our Sacramento premium service, Winters, and Knights Landing. So for Winters, we're actually still using the service area for Vacaville, so there won't be any loss of access, even though we're no longer operating the 220s. And so that's just a note that it's now folded under the Winters service area. And it is now a premium service. So there are paratransit riders who still need to get to their appointments in Vacaville are able to do so. But it's just now being reflected with more of the cost premium associated with operating it since we no longer operate that service on fixed route. And the addition now is that we have Knights Landing, which is a new service area that we've added. And that's to mirror our launch for microtransit, V-Line, which we felt we also need to have that companion access for our paratransit service. So that is also listed as a premium as well, but we're having that mirror access for those residents living within Knights Landing. And the service hours for Winters and Knights Landing are both changed to match the service hours that we operate for our V-Line. So again, kind of as I said earlier, highlighting the routes that have been cut from our fixed route service, but also the times that are going to be shifted in alignment with the hours that we operate for our fixed route. And so I believe one more slide. Okay, so that was the last slide. And I'm kind of open to kind of get a little bit more feedback from you guys.
Well, thank you for the presentation. And I see lots of your hands on the buzzer, so I can leave comments. So I'm going to start on my right. And
Yeah, thank you. I do have a couple of questions. So I guess I had questions from reviewing, but I'll start with one that came up just now. for 21 working days, is there a reason that you would keep that language rather than something like up to 30 days so that you could maybe manage expectations that it would be closer to a month or like allow closer to a month? I think even the words it takes to explain like working days like might or clarify working days might just add, especially if follow up question is like, you know, is that document going to be, kudos for reducing, by the way, like 20 to 15 pages is huge, and I think that the application is going to be better off for that. Is that available in different languages?
Yeah, so the application will be available in different languages once it's complete. For now, just working on it in English.
Okay, cool. The other questions I had were about the service to West Sacramento. And so And then cutting it, you know, cutting service before 6 a.m. Do we know if people use the service in West Sacramento or in general before? Like, is it going to be people that are displaced, basically, their lives?
No, so we're still keeping the service area. It's just the times.
Right.
So they wouldn't necessarily be displaced on a certain, like, accessibility, but they would have to shift their appointment times within the service hours provided.
Okay. But I guess, like, do we know if there's anybody that's, like, steady riding at 545, for example, or something like that?
We can get back to you on. I know we have the rider trips by day,
mm-hmm.
But with the current software we have, I don't think we're able to tell individually specific riders, but I can get back to you on that just to confirm.
Okay, yeah, or like even if there's patterns of like somebody every Wednesday at 5:45 rides or something like that, I think that would be interesting to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like understanding who's going to be impacted, how many people are going to be impacted. Not necessarily who, but how many people would be impacted.
Right, or like, you know, if we were able to know if it's just maybe one person or something, then direct outreach wouldn't be inconceivable about like, hey, this is going away, and, you know, being able to reach somebody directly. Or even continuity planning. I don't know if VIA runs at that time of day or if that connection exists. So, those are my questions. Thank you.
Yeah. So I'd get back to you on the service specifically for riders who would be affected by the times based on the new service hour proposal. For the working days, I think that's still flexible. I just wanted to make the note that some people, you know, when you're applying and you see 21 days, you count every day,
mm-hmm.
unless otherwise stated.
Mm-hmm.
I think for the long term that we are planning, it's just a little bit cart before the horse, but a process that will streamline even further. But for the time being with the current application, digitizing it, making it accessible to submit online, will cut down on the days itself between what a writer needs and when they mail the copy physically to us or if they drop it off here. So just to make that note, there is, if you have a day recommendation, you know, we can definitely look at it. But for the time being, about 15 working days gives a bit more cushion with the team especially, and then still not extending it out a full month.
Right. No, and I appreciate that distinction. I wouldn't even think that 30 days for a process application would be unreasonable. I guess I'm just saying, like, if 15 could easily turn into 21 and if somebody's counting, like, oh, 2 weeks I'll hear from this, and they end up hearing about it 3 weeks or a month. Now, that might be harder to plan around, where I was just maybe suggesting that, I think if I was expecting 30 days and got 14 rather than expecting 14 and getting 21, I'd be happier in that scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that we want to be cognizant of is we hold our contractor accountable to our policies as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to make sure that, you know, we're not giving them that we're making sure that they are hewing to that. But I think that I just want to kind of offer that counter perspective, you know, that if we give them 30 days, we'll keep 30 days. You know what I mean? So some of it is, you know, wanting to give them a reasonable amount of time and also make sure that they're being responsible.
I know it's not my turn, but I want to jump in on that. Having run places where you have to get back to people in a certain number of days and having gone through the days discussion, working days is way better than a fixed set of days because you generally have months with lots of holidays in them, anticipated vacations and things like that. If you're just taking 21 working days, you're almost in a full month, just a day under. So that doesn't count for if there's non-working days in a high holiday month. So just to be mindful of that. What?
Well, I don't have a lot of questions, but I do like the yellow bubble and V-line and some of the rebranding that you're doing. It's sounds good.
What's happening to your ride? Are you phasing out your ride?
You mean by the name?
The name.
Yeah, so your ride's being phased out. E-line is going to be the name for the microtransit service moving forward.
Now, one potential downside to YOLO Mobile, it's gonna, people are gonna rename it YOMO. I don't know if you want to. One thing I'm very familiar with Americans with Disabilities Act, if I had talked to you as you're preparing things. One thing I appreciated, is when coming here, their late son was able to get his picture taken and the band started getting out, and that was a nice gesture. So along those lines, would it be possible to process ADA applications in the cities where people live instead of having to come to Woodland? That's an accommodation that would be helpful for some people.
Yeah, we can totally look into that.
Yeah.
My understanding is historically we offered customer service at the city halls, kind of in the sort of pre-internet era. But I don't know if we offered everything or certain things. And that has come, obviously been reduced. But I don't know. It may be that there's something that we could do with some of the cities, if they were amenable.
I think something we can at least talk with our operators about is maybe putting within the new guidelines, like set days where they would be able to do that in the city. And we just need to coordinate and make sure that they would have staff on those days, but maybe, you know, either once a month or in like a certain city, it would be in our guidelines. So then we could also like put out public notice too, where you could send your, you could come here to this location to drop off your applications for caregiving.
Now, for processing applications, you're talking about like getting the photo taken.
Yeah, the photo taken, the processing application.
Right.
They could probably mail it to you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the application we're talking about being able to do it online.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
It's primarily the picture.
So it would be the photo. I mean, I even wonder if we could come to them. I mean,
I think that,
you know what I mean? Like book an appointment to actually have somebody, Heather could get on one of our vehicles and drive to them and take their photo. I mean, one thing I do think is that, you know, having the equipment, right, to actually print everything and laminate it and whatnot. Like that is, there is, you know, equipment involved.
If it's just a picture, the drivers can do a picture.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Interesting thought.
Well, if they're new, that probably wouldn't work. if they're renewing it, that would work. But I think the
idea of trying to kind of streamline the process as much as possible, particularly that we're dealing with people that have, you know, mobility impairments, and so on, and that's something I think we can think creatively about and brainstorm with you.
Andy.
Thank you. So, question about the downtown Sacramento service. You mentioned that the premium service area. So, does that mean there's like an extra, that as well as in the other premium service areas, does that mean there's an extra fare to travel to those?
The premium service fare is just a bit more expensive than the paratransit standard fare price.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering, but downtown Sacramento, and I'm just wondering if there's like what the finances would be on just including that in the regular area, especially because, I mean, when you have, I mean, the fixed route system, and you have, I mean, like the 42, it is like a pretty, downtown Sacramento is like a pretty standard part of the fixed route system. And then especially like right now, like the fixed routes get detoured so often that I feel like, I mean, for someone who has difficulties with like mobility, it's particularly important to have paratransit in that area right now, just because, I mean, the fixed route service is hard even for someone without any disabilities. So I couldn't imagine like with disabilities for you to run around and like figure out the detours. So I'd recommend just something to think about is looking at the finances for, cause I think that should be just part of the baseline paratransit service area, the same way part of the baseline fixed route service area.
I think that actually we take people further than downtown Sacramento for medical appointments.
We do.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
How far do we take them?
I know that it's at least, it can be as far as, I'm trying to think, I know the farthest that I can at least recall is kind of a Turnbridge area, and that's either picking folks up, bringing them into downtown Sacramento, on their way to like West Sacramento. So we do have a few passengers that are, let's say, in the exception of the premium service, for getting rides into like either parts of downtown, and just Sacramento area.
Oh, okay. So you're saying like downtown is part of the regular service area, and then just like it's further trips that are.
No, but that is the premium service. But what I'm saying is that there are riders who kind of go within that farther boundary downtown Sacramento area.
Uh-huh.
So it's not just like the Capitol Mall. They go deeper within downtown.
Okay.
And so even though, you know, our buses really just go down L and then from Capitol and out. So we're servicing that whole downtown corridor beyond the area where our fixed route bus goes.
Okay.
And that's where the premium comes from.
Okay.
Yeah.
How far, how deep do they go into the city? Deepest one?
There's some exceptions, but it's at least within 5 miles.
Really?
Yeah, so downtown, but beyond as well. And that's only for a few riders, but that we're aware of at this time.
And my understanding is for healthcare appointments.
Yeah.
And so I think like the Arden Arcade area, for example, some of the areas where you have some.
Probably the Kaiser, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
And Morris.
Yeah, oh, yeah. All the hospitals are usually covered within.
Okay.
And do you have an additional question?
Okay. Yeah, thank you for that. I guess then my recommendation would be if it at least makes like the regular to downtown or like the within 3/4 of a mile of the fixed route or whatnot, making that part of the regular. And then of course it's beyond that, technically.
And that, yeah.
It's different, but that'd be a recommendation I'd have. That's it for now. Thank you.
Thank you. So I have some comments, and then I think we'll open it up for folks in the public who want to make comments as well. So yay, kudos. And I also want to say a big thank you to YOLO Transit because they had an opportunity to meet with Maisa, who is a non-neurotypical rider, and talking about those specific needs. And I see that there's a lot of demand these days for non-neurotypical, whereas the system wasn't really originally designed for that. So really appreciate the interest in looking at those populations. On the premium fare, I know that some ultra-regional clients get assistance with the ride, but no one informed either ultra or those clients that there's a premium for Sacramento appointments, for example. And we've had folks get on the bus and then get hit for the additional extra piece of that fare, and not always easily having that extra small amount of money, but not having it with them can be challenging, especially since they can't really just have it on their phone to use that to pay. So a lot of those clients use their phones.
Okay.
I would like to talk about the reader guide. So the reader guide, that sounds lovely. It would be even lovelier after you finish redoing it, to put it online and make it searchable. Because I know a lot of these clients with which I'm familiar, and my son included, that is their primary means of getting information. And especially if they have literacy issues, they can often ask their Siri or their Google to actually make that search for them so they can find the information. So it's super helpful for non-neurotypical writers.
So could I ask a clarifying question on that? So that rather than having just a single PDF, it's like putting the entire text online so it then can be searched from like Google itself can search it?
So you can take them and you can, it's in the PDF format, and then you can use that PDF format to actually stick markers in there. All of those markers then become searchable markers. You can use both Google and standard search ways to find it. And it's not super hard to do with technology you already have. What else do I have? Yes, making the application more user-friendly would be really, really awesome having gone through that. Maybe finding I don't know if you could, but finding a better interface between transit and the doctors and the end user. I'm not sure how to streamline that, but that could be super useful. And then just, I think, a receipt when someone's applied would be really helpful because that then sets the time frame for when you start counting your 21 working days. But it also has, if you're, for whatever reason, gets lost, that person can bring their receipt and show their date and time of application, and that could be super useful. I like the name. Although YOLO, I don't know. YOLO and YOLO. super happy with the D line. And please look at my comments. So with that, we have any members of the public who want to speak on this. We'll start with virtual members.
There are no comments virtually.
No virtual comments. Okay. Anybody in the audience? No. Seeing none. Anybody else have additional questions?
Just a follow-up. If somebody's taking go with us to Sacramento and they're going to maybe a hospital that's further away than normal, is there communication between the bus drivers? And I mean, can they communicate with each other? So we're running late, or an accident is delaying us being there. Is that something that's available now that could be?
Oh, like for the dispatch to notify the rider?
Just in the period transit.
Yeah, so I think that's something we can definitely include in terms of just within the rider guide, like phone up their call if there is a delay within your expected trip pickup. So I think that's something we can include just so that way if that does come up. But I know we are looking more in the long term at getting more app-enabled features, like having an app similar to our V-Line where our riders will have that real-time information as well. So in the interim, yes, I think we can have like a phone number that all riders can call just to get an update regarding their pickup time. But we are definitely looking in the future to modernizing our service.
Can I just jump in on there about the apps and online? So when I joined the Housing Authority, we needed to open our wait list, which is a huge endeavor when that happens. We converted to all electronic, and this was quite a number of years ago. And one of the things that we found was that making it more convenient, more home-based, and more electronic really opened the ability of more disabled folks to access services. And it was really leveled the playing field for people being able to participate, especially if you coordinate with like HHSA and other caregiver folks so that you're training their staff that have client interactions on how the technology works, because then they'll do a lot of that education process for you. So that's like your goals, IMS workers and your ultra regional folks and your HHSA, your CalWORKs people. They'll do a lot of that heavy lift with their own clients. For that, that was hugely beneficial. But much like what happened in the pandemic when we started doing things remotely, the ability of people who are sometimes left out for a whole variety of reasons were suddenly open to being able to participate, and it's a wonderful thing. Thank you. With that, do you have anything else, any last comments or anything else you need from us for direction?
Not online. No, you guys have been very helpful.
Maybe we could say a little bit about next steps.
Oh, yeah. So in terms of next steps, since we won't be meeting again until, I believe, November, so we'll be going to the board in September just to provide them an update, as well as your feedback in regards to what you've been presented so far. I think after that, we're looking to have the finalization of documents in October, so the October board meeting. That's when we're looking to have the updates to the rider guide, policies, name change, and service area and service hours. And once that's approved, I'll have that same presentation for you guys in November. And then for the long term, we'll also give you a date for when we plan to, when the new date to implement the changes for our paratransit service as well. In the long term, so probably looking at next year, we're beginning discussions now with looking at different vendors that would be able to provide us with an app-based paratransit service, and then seeing kind of the features and functionalities and demos, and getting a better idea of what you were saying, Lisa, in terms of, you know, we're improving the access and inducing that level of experience, making sure we are prepared on our end.
So I just wanted to highlight that in terms of that timeline, that means we're not having full drafts of the document coming back to you before your next meeting. And I just wanted to check in with you all about that, because we could do that. It would just be slowing down, you know, having things move a bit more slowly if we were to say wait and bring it to you in November and then bring it to the board after that, before the board adopts it.
Got one more comment. Will we be getting electric paratransit vehicles in the future? Is that on the horizon?
Yeah, so that's within our zero emission bus plan. It probably wouldn't be for at least another 8 years.
Okay.
But we do plan to, once we fully electrify our fleet, that'll include paratransit vehicles.
One thing that's notable in riding those, that they're very stiff as far as things. So there's somebody that's in a wheelchair moving around. If that's improved when they become electrified, that would be helpful. What is the term I'm looking for? The
comfort level?
They're just constructed that they're very stiff.
They're bouncy.
Where did you experience those?
If they could be more like a regular van. I mean, the buses are much better that way, but for some reason.
Okay, you're talking about the smaller.
This is a complaint that we do receive about our paratransit vehicles. They're on a truck chassis, and they're not a van, they're a truck. I think they're like a Ford F-350 frame or something, and so they don't have as comfortable of a ride. Because they're bigger, they seat more people. And I think that's been a key factor in the past. That fleet is aging, and as Courtney mentioned, we are seeing every month we're having higher ridership on our paratransit. It's really kind of going up and up and up and up. And so, we are having some conversations about the fleet. In fact, I know Courtney's working on an application to actually purchase more vehicles, just to meet the demand. So some of the things we want to balance are the size of the vehicle in order to be able to, we pack those vehicles right now, particularly for the longer trips. So we have people going to medical appointments, from Woodland to Sacramento or Davis to Vacaville. We have to balance wanting to have a larger fleet, or larger vehicles, comfortable vehicles, and also kind of what's available as far as zero emission technology. And there's not a lot available in the larger vehicle size category right now. Electric, there's increasingly the vans are available electric, but it does, our biggest cost for providing microtransit service is drivers. And so smaller vehicle means we're having to have two vehicles, two drivers to carry the same number of passengers. So I think that cost equation is an important consideration when we think about vehicles.
Well, I totally agree about the quality of the ride. I hear from it on the radio. I think also you have to realize that some folks with the equipment, some powered wheelchairs can weigh 400 pounds or more, so you definitely need to have a vehicle that can transport people and their equipment. So I find my feedback. But going back to your original question, Madam Director, how do people feel about the streamlined application not coming back to us before it goes to the board?
I think we've had an opportunity to provide input, and I have confidence that it'll be considered.
Patrick and then Andy?
That's fine.
While I share the confidence, I do wonder if we'd be able to review it electronically, like via email or something like that, instead of...
We have to be mindful of the Brown Act if we do that, and having you kind of have it be in a non-public forum. I have to be careful about that. I will say I don't think the board has as much expertise on this issue as you do.
You could individual. We need to be careful not to reply to all. But if we reply just to yourself or to Courtney, then those comments I would think could be considered. You don't necessarily have to act to adopt it, but you could consider it if it's something you haven't thought of and you say, "Wow, that's a good idea. Let's do that." I'd be comfortable with that.
I certainly say take advice from attorney to do that, but it is possible to say if you have comments, send them only to me.
Yeah, I was just going to say I'm also supportive of moving ahead. I'm going to kind of figure if there's like a legal way for us to take a look by email and that. Yeah, we all appreciate that, but in general, supportive of moving ahead.
Okay. I think you got your answer. Okay. Good. That takes us to the next item. This will be the Citizen Advisory Committee recruitment. Are you taking that?
I'm taking that, Madam Chair. So, so this is a topic, as you know, that we've been talking about for some months now. Go ahead and go to the next slide, Heather. Because just kind of a reminder of where we are. In February, the board approved the addition of 2 at-large seats to the CAC and approved stipends to help with financial hardships, as well as a number of other recommendations of the committee. They did, the board, as part of their motion, voted to appoint an ad hoc committee to change the criteria for representation on the committee in terms of the different kinds of attributes that we wanted to have on the committee. So that ad hoc committee met. They came up with a revised list of criteria. You all discussed that list of criteria at your last meeting, and then that was forwarded to the board with your comments. And was approved by the board at the July meeting. So we are now ready to go out and start recruiting. Next slide. So this is the revised list of criteria, just to remind you. I actually think we changed the language around transit dependent, but I don't see that in this slide. So I haven't forgotten, Andy. And we did, so I think we have to just make sure we have the right language there. Because I see transit dependent, but that I believe that we changed that. I think we have it something people, I can't remember exactly what the right language is, but we'll get that to you. Anyway, so these are the criteria that we have now. And then go to the next slide. One of the things you recommended, was to actually poll the current CAC to, get a sense of how our current committee, reflects some of those attributes. So we did send out a poll last week. We got responses from 3 of the 5, so not everyone. And that poll remains open. So if anybody would like to, add that information, that'd be great. And we just wanted to share the results with you here. We have a lot of parents, caregivers in the group. And we have a number of other criteria where we, that you can see reflected here. But some notable omissions as well. So we wanted to share that information with you and then really have a conversation with you about a couple things. So if we go to the next slide. Soliciting a diverse pool of candidates to meet these criteria, where should we focus our recruitment efforts? And in terms of where I'm thinking both geographically and also in terms of like organizations that we can partner with. That may help be able to help us get the word out to help find the right folks. In the past, I think so. I should clarify for the vacancies that we have currently, because of the addition of the at-large seats, we have 1 vacant at-large seat, and then we have 2 new vacant at-large seats, and we did keep it to 9, so it's an odd number. So we basically have 3 vacancies, all of which are at-large seats. So the process is a little different. We have a bit more. So the way that when it's the seats that are appointed, all of the seats need to be filled by an action of the board, but it is up to the sitting board members to kind of make a recommendation to the board, if you will, for their jurisdiction. When it comes to the at-large seats, it's more generalized. And so we don't have that same kind of gatekeeper, if you will, of the sitting board member. So there's a bit more, I think, openness and flexibility around how we do that recruitment, more open-ended, which I think is a great opportunity. So thinking about recruitment, how do we take advantage of this opportunity, to really recruit to help meet the criteria that we've identified as a priority? How do you, as the current CAC, want to be involved in that process? I don't know how it was in the past. For example, when Mr. Ferrillo was seated, I don't know what your role was. And so hopefully some of you do. And I would love to solicit your feedback on whether or not that was the right process, if you would change it at all. how you'd like to see, you know, your role there, as well as, and then, you know, we will bring it to the board, right, for a board action. But my sense is that the board doesn't want to do a ton of vetting necessarily on their own, particularly because these are at-large seats, not for a person representing, you know, their jurisdiction. So love your thoughts on that. And then the application form itself. So we have made some modest updates to the application form, really to just reflect the new recruitment criteria and to, you know, put the current branding on there. But if you have thoughts on how we can make sure that we are both getting the information that we want while not making the process overly onerous, we'd love your feedback on that. So those are my questions for you.
Thank you very much. Before we get started, I think we'll take questions from the public first. Do we have anybody online?
You know.
Anybody in the audience? All right. Who wants to go first? Everybody's thinking. Mm-hmm. Patrick.
Well,
and then Andy, and then Owen.
Yeah, thank you. I'll skip straight to questions about the application. It was captured in the minutes from last meeting that we recommended advertising the stipend in the application. And I didn't see that in there. And then also the opportunity or potential opportunity for transit for the rides to the meeting.
Okay.
So I think those would be wonderful additions.
Okay.
Andy.
Thank you. So first looking at the application, just one minor thing. So I think I see like on the second page here, like it has the check boxes for the different jurisdictions and then at large. I mean, since this recruitment is just for at large, I don't know, like if someone like, I mean, someone might not realize that like the seat for the actual citizens are full. Maybe make it clear like from the start that they're applying for.
Well, that brings up a really good question because they might not always be just applied for at large. So maybe there's a way, if this is an electronic form, to gray those out and then just highlight the ones that are open.
Gotcha.
And then still get them.
I know. Thanks for that. That's a great suggestion. And then let's see, looking at the rate for the, just some thoughts on, places to just recruiting candidates. So I know like when you were asking when I was recruited, it was like, I think I just was like interested in getting more involved with transit and I just reached out. I'd seen that like applications were open and then reached out to Don Saylor and like asked him like was able to, and then was able to get his support like to get on. But it was more, it wasn't like there was a recruitment effort to, for that. So I think in terms of getting out there, I do notice that right now there's like, I think there is a chance like with the different college, like school and college campuses. Like, I mean, of course, like, I mean, I think I mentioned last time, I mean, with UC Davis, of course, and since a lot of them use Yolobus in addition to Unitrans, then they have the automatic process for getting on the Unitrans advisory committee, but maybe even coordinating with some of those folks, like maybe someone who's on one of the three who's on Unitrans would also want to come here or something like that, or something along those lines, like something with through, because that could be coordinated with ASDCD, but then also even beyond UCD, it was importantly, I've been coordinating with like the Woodland Community College and some of the other campuses too, and even potentially through their student governments, and they might have interest there, because that seems like a possibility as well. But then I feel like also it's important to get, I mean, to reach out to them and maybe like, I wonder if there's anything we can do for like Cass Creek Casino, since I mean, they're working on the 215 line, like the workers there are huge users of that. But I don't know if they're workers, if there's a employee organization there of some sort to potentially coordinate with.
Interesting. Yeah.
There's something that we'll have to keep brainstorming on those, just a couple of thoughts that come to mind.
That's great.
And that is Owen and then Stephen.
Okay. Just to kind of continue the discussion that Andy's started, I was thinking one way you might, I mean, you've got to reach out, I think, or we're not going to get anybody. just won't happen. Mm-hmm. So one thought that I had was also approach maybe some of the leaders that you may know in the community, the mm-hmm. tribal leaders, and just go out and ask them, do you know who would have an interest in this? Who do you think would be a good representative for the tribe, using that example, and so on. So, you know, some of this with the homeless is going to be really tough. But that's another way that I think you get it. You just got to, it's almost like you hire a headhunter or something.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have that kind of budget, I'm sure, but it might fall on you or others on the staff who have these connections or, you know, and organizations that exist for, you know, minority groups and others. Some of the leaders in that, mm-hmm. those areas. I got a little tiny comment here on the application, which is the question, what skills and experience can you bring to this committee? Now, if I'm a homeless person, that question is going to intimidate the hell out of me. What can I do? I'm just suggesting maybe a change in the language that makes it more open, be more general, more encouraging. What are your skills and how do you think they could they would relate to this position? And or can you describe your strongest assets? And then you figure out how that would fit in to this. If you say, and how does it pertain to this position? You know, that's the kind of question you typically get on any oral. And you know, some of these folks may not have thought that much about what this job is.
Right.
They may not really know what it is. And so that would, you know, you just kind of have to read between the lines
mm-hmm.
a little bit on that. And then the last little comment that I've got is as a homeless and or as homeless and or have experienced homelessness, I just say have experienced homelessness. Because there's a little embarrassed with that. But if you ask me, have I been homeless?
Mm-hmm.
I might be more inclined to say yes. But am I homeless now?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to talk about that. Maybe.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's it.
David.
Yes, let me talk about that since you wrote it up. I know a number of the folks who are homeless in Davis use Gold Bus, and they sometimes have provided complimentary tickets, and so they would check that off. Are you current school bus rider? And that was good. Some of my comments are more personal. What is the length of the terms when we start? I started November 20, but I picked up July of 17 till September 20. Nathan was with me, and I was helping him. But are they 3-year terms, 4-year terms?
I want to say they're 4 years. I don't have any of them, but I want to say four.
That's my turn.
Yeah.
So that would put me till November 24, if that's the case.
And then there's not term limits, but what it is at the end of a term, a person needs to be reappointed and can continue to serve. But there are no term limits currently, and I recall, in our guidelines or in our bylaws.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a few comments. So first of all, I have many of the same comments that the illustrious colleagues here have expressed to you, and I'm not going to repeat them. I think when it comes to the knowledge, skills, experience piece, kind of tagging on with what Olin talked about, I do find that some of the populations that we're trying to recruit probably won't write you an essay question. So, but they might do a checkbox. This seems to be more standard these days. So to try to get a student or a busy person or anybody else, they might like to have some combination of checkboxes and write-in. just want to make sure you're getting, they might not even know what skills you're looking for. So giving them a checkbox kind of helps them think about what those skills might be. With regard to the outreach, I think a great place to go is tribal healthcare right here in Woodland. They work with indigenous folks and of course are affiliated with the tribe, but they work with lots of different kinds of folks, some who are tribal members and some who are indigenous but don't qualify for tribal benefits, and those both are super valuable people to be talking to, especially indigenous folks who don't qualify. I definitely think reaching out to Health and Human Services, both their mental health component as well as their social services and their Medi-Cal side and SSI would be a great place to do a recruitment. Definitely Alta. They've got an entire kind of ecosystem of folks like PK Momentum, which is a job training program, as well as Goals, which is an independent living group, and a bunch of others. So they would be able to kind of go to their ecosystem. I would say Department of Rehab is probably another great place to do that. They have an office here in Woodland as well. And then I think a really, really overlooked place, but where we have a lot of folks who have high need and maybe overrepresented in the criminal justice systems, they're overrepresented there and underrepresented in services and input. So with that, I would go to probation and the public defender's office. There is a lot of really interesting work being done that probation oversees in sort of post-incarceration social reintegration programming and diversion. So I would also go to neighborhood court through the DA's office and reach out to those folks. And then finally, I would definitely go to the Loudoun County Office of Education and to the migrant education folks. And then it is important to remember that all three child care centers operated by the, well, there's two in Yolo County, by the two migrant centers in Yolo County, the child care centers there are open to farm workers, whether or not they live in the migrant center. So year-round farm workers will also have their children there during the time that that child care center is open. So that's a great place to do outreach. They've got a really cohesive community. And last but not least, definitely the Head Start here in Woodland. So those are just some suggestions.
So talk to me about how you want to be involved in the recruitment process. Or recruitment and screening process.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. So able to brainstorm a few more outreach ideas, okay, if I could share them.
You may.
Okay, thank you. So I was glad to hear the university's mission, but I would also include Los Rios because they have a satellite campus here and in West Sacramento. Sac State is West Sac and Yolo County serving. They have free job boards, which I always use to get postings out for openings in nonprofit because they're free. And then career fairs, I think might be a place, I know students are looking for, you know, steady but not, time consuming, opportunities. So, then I was also thinking, NGOs and community groups, nonprofits, a lot of them have newsletters. It's a great place to, get the opportunity out. One that came to mind, well, a few come to mind, like Valley Vision, places like that, even SACOG, but also NorCal Resist might be a good one. Similar to Alta, groups like ULI or the American Planning Association, for people, you know, in the career pipeline, maybe, that are looking to gain some volunteer experience in like a related field. High school booster clubs, for young people. I know SACRT has a transit academy that's coming online. So people who participate in that, or there's an equivalent over here. And on the buses.
Okay.
I don't know if that's probably a good revenue stream that would be used for internal messaging, but.
No, we don't,
Sorry, our advertising is only outside the buses. The internal bulkheads are not, we don't sell that space. So it's reserved for nonprofits, community, et cetera. So no, it is great.
That does spark that I had PSA on my list and I forgot to say it. So doing a public service announcement would be super helpful.
Yeah, I'd like to just second. So yeah, I think we're definitely on the bus. I know that over time, I think when around the time that I started, as well as like I kind of remember even like when I was younger, riding Yolo bus, seeing like posters in the buses for the Citizens Advisory Committee.
Oh,
that's
wow.
Something that at least I remember. So
shaped him from a young
age. As you know, the committee existed. Like even that was probably how I first learned of the CAC's existence. And then the Transit Academy also, that's a great suggestion. I actually attended that back in 2021, and that's actually coming up this year, like late September, early October, where they're going to be having another, Sacramento is going to be doing another Transit Academy. So I think that's definitely there, and there definitely could be other Yolo County folks there. So, and I'll actually be speaking on the panel of that, like the first day, so I'll try to mention us and make sure people know we're recruiting. And then also along the lines of SACRT, I know they have their like mobility advisory council, which I mean they've definitely targeted something that they're focused on like more paratransit aspects of them. They've targeted more like disadvantaged communities. So maybe just learn, just maybe just speaking with them about strategies they've used to recruit folks.
Hmm. Yeah.
Bring some more ideas to them.
Along those lines, definitely the Famous Phoenix Coalition.
Mm-hmm. And the Supportive Life Institute.
Running out of space. I was gonna catch. It's all being recorded, so we're good.
I'm on board for that now.
What was the last one?
Supported by the Institute.
Since we're adding to the list, Lisa went through so many. One source in Woodland is Green Gate School, because they have California Children's Services, occupational therapy, and physical therapy. So some of those, any of the young, they go up to 18 or 19, depending. And then Shriners Hospital, Alan Anderson Davis could be a source for that, because people from all over the county, the children are eligible at Shriners Hospital.
And I actually think the Shriner folks are involved right now in a supportive housing component out of Davis as well, so that'd be a good one.
Do you have enough on your list?
Madam Chair, the executive director asked us how we would like to be involved.
Yeah, getting there.
Oh, good.
So back to your question. Now that everybody's added to their list, I thought Patrick was going to kick it off. But it sounds like Owen wants to. So how would you like to be involved? Owen, you first.
Well, I just say, you know, that could be between Amber and yourself. You could decide how we would participate, if at all. I do think it would be a good idea to have someone, you know, the board isn't going to pay attention to this a whole lot. We're more on the ground than they are. And so I think they would probably want us to be involved. And I think it's appropriate that we be involved in some way. Not that all of us have to convene an interview, participate in an interview process, but I think between the two of you could probably figure out a way to include us in a meaningful way and yet not be a burden to the staff who's doing all the legwork and has got a lot of work in front of you to make this, you know, really work. We've got people that can be helpful and participate and are not intimidated by this process. Or they perhaps a little bit shy initially, but will participate as time goes on. So those are my thoughts.
Thanks, Owen. Others?
I'll comment. I'd be certainly glad to help interview people when it gets to that point.
Okay. So, taking Owen's comment in mind, I could certainly see how we could maybe vet out a framework, and roles and then see how people would like to populate them. Part of that would probably be, creating sort of outreach materials that we can each take to our folks with whom we have affiliations, especially being mindful that here we're trying to broaden diversity. So we're looking at those folks that are going to fit in that wheelhouse. And did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was going to just suggest that, I think probably it should be like, not at least, unless we get like a huge number, unless it were like an overwhelming number of applications, but I would suggest that, but if it's just like a couple come in, I would suggest it be kind of a more fatal flaw kind of review, where it's not like we're looking to eliminate candidates, but more of making sure that we want that, maybe something where just like a brief, I'd be happy to get them to like some sort of brief look just to make sure that like they are, that they interact somewhat closely when be using, or they differ, or they interact closely with people who use the trend system, making sure they're closely affected by it. And then also just making sure that they're not like, that we're not getting like NIMBYs to oppose trend service and whatnot. Somehow they don't try to like, which I know I remember hearing in the past that was an issue, with Davis with the unit grant advisory committee, not as much now, but I know just from what I've heard that was an issue in the past. So you have like people who didn't want like a bus stop in front of their house or whatever. But.
So what's the process to make sure that doesn't happen?
you can't get there all the time. But I will say that, some of the other organizations I'm familiar with where they are looking for this type of participation will do a simplified application process, and then they will do kind of a review for a review committee, settle on top candidates, and then do an interview. And partly that's to gauge any sort of interest and level of commitment, not making it overly onerous because we want people to participate, but being able to, sometimes you'll have people who think that they're applying for something different, and you're able to sort of redirect them to where they'd be more useful, so that you're making sure you're bringing the candidate on the committee that they're sort of happy that this is the place they landed. And so we don't have folks prematurely dropping off because that's not what they thought they signed up for.
So we're focusing on the two at large.
Three.
Well, two are occupied, though. Or two are unoccupied. Yeah.
One's occupied, one's vacant, and now we've had two more added, so we have three vacancies. So there'll be four total at large within the five jurisdictional members, for a total of nine.
So just to get a sense of the community, are people okay with that suggestion of Olin's and we bring something back for folks to consider? You need a motion?
So I don't think so. I don't think we need a motion, but I want to make sure I reiterate what I heard. So I think what I heard is that, and you're welcome to do a motion if you want, not to say. I just don't think we need it. Because all of this is just in the spirit of implementing what's in our bylaw, right? Because we're not changing our bylaw, we're just implementing it. So I think what I heard was that Autumn and Lisa will get together to come up with a framework for a process and what roles are needed. But roughly the process would be that we would ask people to apply. There would be a review panel that would review the application and identify the people that we want to interview. And then based on the results of that interview, make a recommendation to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think that sounds great. If I could add a comment, that maybe we just make sure we give ourselves the latitude to amend the process based on the response or demand that we get. Because I don't want to bog the process down and like waiting to see what demand we get.
It could also be a rolling process. And like I said, you have to wait to get like critical that number.
Right.
So I think that'll be part of the discussion. I think that we have a straightforward. Right. And I think that's it for that item.
Yes, thank you all so much for these recommendations and suggestions. Very helpful. And I think, and again, just in terms of next steps, are we comfortable, do we want to come back and have another conversation about this in November? Or are we comfortable kind of doing some of that offline, maybe via email, so that we can kind of keep the process moving? I'm seeing heads nodding. So offline, like not having to wait to the next meeting to kind of move this forward, yeah?
Offline email.
Yeah. Okay. Very good.
Unless we fall down.
Right.
I think the floor is yours, Madam Director.
Okay, so I think our last agenda item for the evening is administrative reports, and I'm going to start. You want me to do my executive director's report, and then we'll do the committee members' reports. Reports and
perfect.
Okay, great. So I wanted to first start by acknowledging the passing of Supervisor Gary Sandy, who, while I was not here during his tenure, I understand served on the board of directors for the district for many years. And I know some of you knew him, and so just wanted to extend, our thoughts and condolences to the folks that he worked with, as well as, of course, his family. On a more cheerful note, I wanted to introduce someone. This is Chaz Rodrigo, who is our new Director of Finance and Operations. We are very thrilled to have us. She joined us most recently from the Vallejo Flood and Wastewater District. I hope I got the name right, where she worked her way up from kind of a finance analyst to a manager of finance, and she's been on the board for yesterday was 1 week, so we're thrilled to have her on board, and that also means we've said goodbye to Leah Levinson, who was our interim CFO, who came on board as a consultant to help us kind of revamp our financial administrative systems, and has now moved on to going and helping fix other organizations that need help, and helped us recruit Chaz, and we're so grateful to have her with us. So please join me in welcoming her.
Welcome. There's a good summary on your website, too.
Yes.
Is good. Short and short commute?
It's not the same. Just opposite direction.
Okay.
Probably a little less traffic going this way. Other updates, the Beeline will launch officially here in Woodland on September 18th. So stay tuned for details. We're going to be having a ribbon cutting celebration in downtown Woodland. We'd love to have you join us. We're not sure what the ribbon will be cut. You know, the ribbon will be around, but we'll figure it out. We don't want to scratch the paint on the vehicles with the scissors, but we'll figure something out. So stay tuned when you'll be getting a save the date, and we hope you can join us for that. Very exciting. On the YOLO 80 project, I just wanted to provide a brief update on that. We are still waiting for Caltrans to release the draft environmental document. I actually have a meeting tomorrow with senior members of the Caltrans administration in Sacramento to try to help break the logjam so we can get that document on the street and start having public discussion about it, even while there remain many unresolved issues. But the environmental document is quite late at this point. And there's just, unfortunately, you know, we don't have a lot of information that we can share with our board or the public until that document is made public. So we are, you know, and to that end, we are also exploring options for additional funding, because as you know, we did not receive the state funding that we needed to build the kind of project that we had been talking about, which was a tolling both directions between West Sacramento and Davis. So we're exploring an option for additional funding, and while our goal for the ultimate project remains unchanged, we anticipate it will have to be a phased approach to get us there, given, you know, the funding constraints and that we're not able to have the funding to do everything in one fell swoop. So there's no decisions yet on what that phased approach would be. Our board has asked for more information and in part understanding, you know, what the trade-offs would be. So we hope to have that draft environmental document released as soon as possible so that we can then engage in that conversation with you all, as well as our board and our community. And once we do have that, once Caltrans has released that, we'll be making sure to keep you all updated. Not sure about timing of the Citizens Advisory Committee relative to when the EIR is released and the public comment period, but certainly open to hearing, you know, if there's interest or desire in a special meeting to make sure that the CAC has a chance to discuss the draft environmental document while it's on the street, and certainly welcome your suggestions that are open to making that happen. And then lastly, some good news, our YOLO Active Transportation Corridors project, or YATSE, which will be planning a network of intercity bicycle pedestrian routes here in YOLO County, has finally kicked off after a year-long delay in terms of the grant administration with the federal government, because that is a grant-funded project. So we're really thrilled. We kicked that meeting off internally about 2 weeks ago, and are kind of looking at rolling out a whole bunch of community outreach and engagement to start, you know, that process in the fall. So we anticipate we'll have a detailed update for you on that at our next meeting, which brings me to the long-range calendar, and then I will stop talking. So your next meeting is scheduled for November 2023. We had anticipated that time bringing you a recommendation on the Woodland Transit Center, the new Woodland Transit Center, as you'll recall from prior meetings. Again, update on the Yolo Active Transportation Corridors project. We're looking ahead to the meeting schedule for 2024 and hopefully an update on CAC recruitment. And then we do need to adopt the calendar, so we don't have meetings scheduled for 2024, but we wanted to just give you a broad look ahead anyway. Of course, appointing chair and vice chair. We are working to align our annual work plan with the fiscal year, and so we're going to be launching that work planning process really at the beginning of the year, start thinking about what are our goals for the next fiscal year. And so we want to really, of course, engage with you in that process, both in terms of the work plan for the CAC itself, what you'd like to see done, as well as, you know, your input on the organizational work plan as a whole. And we are also working on a 10-year capital improvement plan that's been slowed down due to other priorities, but we anticipate bringing that to you early next year. And then, of course, May is when we'll be looking at our budget for the next calendar year. So this will, of course, change, but wanted to just give you that sense of kind of some of the longer range items that we know are coming to you.
Thank you. And with that, we have a commissioner comment, and Lisa, we'll start with this end of the table.
Thank you. So for the next, for Davis, the next Bicycling Transportation and Street Safety Commission meeting is on September. I want to say it's end of the second Thursday in September. That would be September 14th. That'll be at the Davis Senior Center. That starts at 5:30 p.m. Again, I'll be admin. I'm not really sure what will be on the agenda for that.
And
don't have anything to share at the moment. I'm back.
I'll start out with a question, which is, has anyone heard anything from Terry Bassett? I know
I'm not.
Okay, I know you've reached out to him in the past, but I just wondered, I haven't heard anything myself. And that leads me to a suggestion. We would not be meeting in this wonderful room, which I can tell you is a vast improvement from where the board used to meet, which was in the City Hall, Woodland City Hall. And this is just a much more pleasant room. We have the electronics here, and I don't know if that was Terry's innovation or that was yours, or a combination of the two. But it's really wonderful. I noticed that when someone's speaking, the camera goes to them. When you're speaking, it goes to you, and I presume when it's an audience member speaking, it goes to them. And I don't know how that happens, but it's really
this little magical thing right here.
So that's you.
No, not Heather. This little device that's sitting on the table.
Oh, really?
It looks like it might be an owl. It is called an owl. That is right.
But at any rate, Terry was the father of the system, the parent of the system. He was a lowly planner for the county, and as it's been told to me, and he had the idea for Yolo Bus, and whether and you know appropriate to consider other names for things, but he got the whole operation started, and then he departed, and you were appointed, Amber, and I think it's been a marvelous change. The organization needed change, and you've been doing a great job. But here's my thought, and I'll just toss it out for consideration. It seems to me there ought to be some kind of ongoing recognition of what Terry did, and perhaps naming this room in honor of him, or another appropriate room in the building. I don't think you need to name the building for him. That's probably, reserved for an outstanding board member or just not have it named, other than the Yellow Bus headquarters, but, or YCTD headquarters, but, you know, perhaps this room would make sense. I think it's, you know, would be fitting. And, certainly make him feel good, I'm sure.
As I recall, we named a bus for him. But I know there is something actually with the
okay.
name on it. And
okay.
I got to get on the bus.
Oh, great. Thank you. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
There is also a plaque in our customer service center.
Oh, okay. And what is it? It just acknowledges his contribution?
I would have to go. I would have to go there and look. But no, I appreciate that. And, you know, Madam Chair's discretion, you know, that's something we can talk about as a committee.
I'm just throwing it out there. And, yeah. You know.
Yeah, thank you.
And we'll go along with the challenge.
Patrick. I'm sorry, is this just for additions to the Long Range Calendar or updates?
This is, we moved the commissioner updates to the end.
Okay.
So here we are.
Okay. Then I just wanted to mention in West Sacramento, right now there's a Riverfront Street expansion project going on under the bridge. Fifth Street is a really cool project, but it does take away access to a freeway entrance on River Road, and Fifth Street's closed from, it was closed starting on the 22nd through today. So I guess less relevant to that end, but more relevant to the fact that it will provide protected bike lanes and sidewalk, and it's an active transportation project that I think is really great, but it does cause some slow down and bottlenecking with construction going on. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't think I have anything to add other than that I was at Democracy Winters last weekend, and some folks that came out from Davis and wanted to talk about transit a little bit while the assembly building was there. So just bringing it up that you're at the forefront of people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And thank Alan Hirsch for riding his bike all the way from Davis to Wintersport. Did you have another?
Yeah, just one other story that I had, or one other update that I forgot to mention earlier, and that's, I mentioned earlier that the SAC RIT Transit Academy for this year is scheduled for like late. I think it's the week, it's like that, like the last, like the end of September, early October, like that week. And applications for that are open right now on Stack IT's website. And, I think it may say, like, you have to live in Sacramento County, but I was able to attend a couple of years ago living in Yolo County, and I'm sure they'd be happy to have any of you all also. So, and it definitely was a good experience when I attended it. So, it's something, it's like 4 weeks, it's like, it's like four, essentially it's like the first, that last week of September, it's like once a week, it's like, and it's like after work, it's like 6 to 8 p.m. It's like 2 hour session, just about like learning the intricacies of how SAC RIT works, and also inspiring people to continue to advocate for transit also. So, and you get a tour of like their bus garages and stuff like that. It's a cool way to just see even more up close, like how a good transit system works.
Cool. Madam Chair, I presume you're getting ready to close the meeting.
I'm working on it.
Okay. I'd like to suggest that you agree and the committee agrees that we close the meeting tonight in honor of Gary Stan.
I got a consensus. Okay. Then I will happily do that. Before that, we always come to this room and we have these fabulous meetings and we have great support. But we almost never say anything. So tonight, thank you, Heather, for helping us do all the amazing things that we do and keeping us on the right track. Thank you, Courtney. Great presentation. Thank you, Autumn, for your leadership. And with that, we'll adjourn in the way of Gary's.
Thanks, all. And that was a great idea.